Okay, good morning everybody and welcome. Before we start, I'd like to make a dedication. The Shira has been very kindly dedicated and sponsored in loving memory of the dear mother of the sponsors, Anabir Le'ilu Nishmat, Chana Tova Bat Yaakov Halevi, Vesima Miriam, Zichronam Livracha, on her second Yortzeit. This is sponsored by her children, Cookie and Howard Mizell, who it's lovely to see here, who were neighbors of mine, or maybe I was neighbors of theirs, both in Har Nof for many years. It's lovely to see them here, and we're very grateful for the dedication. Thank you very much. And we have actually a topic today which is extremely divisive, I would say, as a machitza topic. Forgive the initial pun. But we'll see that there's far more to this topic than perhaps initially meets the eye. I in fact realized quite soon after preparing the shiur that we would actually need to have 1.5 shiurim on this. Meaning we will spill over a little bit into next week and deal with another related topic next week, which hopefully will be the positioning of the bima in the shul, which was also a very interesting topic in the 19th century. So we'll see if we can finish this and do that. But today I want to give you at least an introductory understanding to what's going on with this issue of the machitza. So I brought you on page one a very short history of what we today call family seating. Which I didn't call it that in England, but in America they call it family seating. And interestingly, just historically, the reform communities in Germany in the 19th century were very against the idea of mixed seating, mixing men and women together. Even in the earlier 20th century, the reform temple in Hamburg, which was the cradle in many ways of German reform, refused a donation of 1,000,000 marks. Which at the time, and still, is a large amount of money, from someone who insisted that they give the money only if the men and women could sit together. They said, no way, we don't do that in Germany. In fact, mixed seating started in the reform movement in America, and its origins were really quite a little bit random. I brought you here an account on the first page, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it starts with an early American reform rabbi here, who is Rabbi Wise. Who was Rabbi Wise? Not Rabbi Stephen Wise, Rabbi Isaac Meyer Wise, who is no close relation of the later, more famous Rabbi Wise, who came in the early, in the mid-1840s to serve as a rabbi in Bethel, I'm looking at the name of the congregation, Bethel, in Albany. Just pick it up in the third paragraph here. He says here he was a new immigrant, 27 years old, thoroughly inexperienced, like every good young rabbi is, but he dreamt great dreams and displayed boundless energy. Before long, he introduced reforms. Like most reforms, it was aimed at improving decorum, always a bit of a fruitless task in shuls, but he tried at least getting rid of some of the piyutim, etc., and moving in a mixed choir. Okay, so far, that far he got. He never even raised the issue of family pews. But if you pick up the last paragraph here, a series of tangled disputes between Wise and his president, Louis Spanier, led to Wise's dismissal from Beth El congregation 2 days before Rosh Hashanah in 1850. Wise considered his firing illegal, and on the advice of legal counsel, he took his place as usual on Rosh Hashanah morning, even though he'd been fired. Okay? As he made ready to remove the Torah from the Ark, Louis Spanier, who was the president, took the law into his own hands, lashed out at him, assaulted him, knocked off his hat, wounded his pride, all on Rosh Hashanah, of course, and precipitated a general melee that the police had to be called to quell. Then you're probably familiar with this scene from other places, but the next day, Wise held Rosh Hashanah services at his home, which is probably sensible. The day after that, he was invited to a meeting consisting of prominent members of the congregation together with a large number of young men, where a new congregation, Anshe Emet, came into being. Anshe Emet dedicated his new building, formerly a Baptist church, on October 3rd, 1851. Anshe Emet is usually credited with being the first synagogue with mixed seating in the world. And in fact, the reason it had mixed seating, he would carry on here, American Judaism is indebted to Anshe Emet, said Rabbi Wise, in Albany for one important reform, i.e. family pews. The church building had family pews. The congregation resolved unanimously to retain them. The innovation was imitated later in all American Reformed congregations. This was an important step which was severely condemned at the time. And he says, according to this account, and it's the only substantial one we have, family pews entered Judaism for pragmatic reasons. Why? members voted to make do with the costly building that they bought and not to expend additional funds to convert its American-style family pews into a more traditional Jewish seating arrangement. So basically what happened is Rabbi Weiss got fired, they bought a very expensive building, didn't want to invest more money in making a machitza, and they said, you know something, he ever said a kacha, and they kept it as family seating, and therein was born a revolution, which is very interesting as to how the whole thing started, and of course now it is absolutely fundamental in congregations, both Reform and many conservatives, that family seating is essential. Now, as some of you in this room may remember, this became a very, very big issue within the Orthodox world as well in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, as a number of Orthodox synagogues began to also remove the mechitza and opt for family seating. And one of the most public cases was in 1955, when there was a congregation in Michigan, Mount Clemens, Michigan, that voted to remove the mechitza. Basically, the shul voted to get rid of the mechitza, the Orthodox shul. The rabbi of the shul agreed, let's get rid of the mechitza. And one particular congregant, Baruch Litvin, who was very much against this with a few other people, decided to challenge them. The shul refused to go to the Beis Din, so he took it to the Michigan court system. The initial judge, the circuit judge, said he had no jurisdiction to intervene in a religious dispute between the congregants and the shul. However, he appealed at great expense, and in 1959, the Michigan Supreme Court actually ruled in his favor and ruled that an Orthodox community must have a mechitza in order to be called an Orthodox community. And that was a landmark judicial ruling in America, which really set the scene and to some degree reversed the tide of these changes, because there's now also a legal issue. That community is now a conservative community, but Litvin actually produced a very interesting book called The Sanctity of the Synagogue, where he went through all the sources and collected them together of why indeed we have a mechitza. One of the striking issues on this halakhic question is there is no source explicitly in any of the major legal codes, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, etc., that actually says that you need a mechitza. And this has caused everybody to scratch their heads, because all Orthodox shuls have had mechitzas, we'll see next week, really forever. And the question is, why doesn't it actually say, it says a lot of other things, there's no shortage of pages and ink. It could have easily said, you need a mechitza in shul, and it doesn't. We'll look next time a little bit as to why it may be that the requirement, the halakhic requirement of mechitza is not actually where you'd expect to find it. But there's no question that the Orthodox world unanimously understood this to be the case. And we'll see what the actual sources are starting today and going into next week. If you look at two sources here from Rav Soloveitchik, they will set the scene. Number two, he wrote as follows. The separation of sexes in the synagogue is a basic tenet of our faith. It dates back to the very dawn of our religious halachic community. We'll see soon what he's talking about. And constitutes a Pentateuchic injunction, which is basically an Issa Doraisa. It's a mitzvah Doraisa to have a mechitza. Where does he get that from? We'll see that too. Which can never be abandoned by any legislative act on the part of a rabbinical lay body. Regardless of its numeric strength or social prominence, what was decreed by God can never be undone by human hand. Very clear, it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, no shul can vote it away, no rabbi can choose to get rid of it, you need to have a mechitza in shul. And he even said to the point, to the extent as follows in number three, to make absolutely clear, said Rav Soloveitchik, my position on this latent question is as follows. I would like to relate this incident. A young man moved into a suburb of Boston where the only existing synagogue had men and women sitting together. He asked me what he should do on the high holy days. Until then, on account of the mixed seating, he had not entered the synagogue, but on the days of awe, he was very reluctant to remain at home. I answered him that it were better for him to pray at home. Both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and not cross the threshold of that synagogue. A few days later, he telephoned me again. He had met the man who was to sound the shofar in that synagogue, and this man had warned him that if he did not come to the synagogue, he would not sound the shofar again privately for his benefit. The young man practically implored me that I grant him permission to enter the edifice for at least half an hour, that he might hear the shofar blast. I hesitated not for a moment, writes Rav Soloveitchik, but directed him to remain at home. It would be better not to hear the shofar than to enter a synagogue whose sanctity had been profaned. That's a very strong statement from Rav Soloveitchik. So given the strength of the matter, let's see where people are coming from. There are around six reasons why
halachically, you need to have a mechitza in shul. Today we're going to look at three of them. Next time we're going to look at two or three of them, and as I said, do something else towards the end of the shiur. Let's go back to the very beginning. Seder of Soloveitchik, it goes to the very dawn of our religious halachic community. Where? So let's look at the Beis HaMikdash. It's always nice to look into the Beis HaMikdash a little bit. Was there a women's section in the Beis HaMikdash? To which the answer is yes. But who sat in the Ezras Nashim, or who was in the Ezras Nashim in the Beis HaMikdash? Let's look at that because it's not so clear. Number four. The Mishnah in Kalim says, Har Habayit Mekudash Mimeno. It goes through the different levels of Kedusha of Har Habayit. Har Habayit is more Kaddish than Yerushalayim. The Hachel Mekudash Mimeno. Then there was a railing around the temple courtyard system on Har Habayit. That was even more Kaddish. Why? She'ein Ovdi Kachavim V'tamei Meit Nichnasim L'Sham. Because that Adkan was where the non-Jewish community who went to the temple, they could go to that point and no further. In fact, we even discovered the sign in Greek, saying basically the original sign from Har Habayit was dug up, saying non-Jews may proceed up to this point, but no further. So we see that there were certain people bounded on the Beis HaMikdash site. Ezrat Nashim Mekudeshet Mimen. And the Ezrat Nashim was one stage even higher than that, we'll see why soon. Ezrat Yisrael Mekudeshet Mimen, and then the Azara of the Yisraelim was even higher. And then the Ezrat Kohanim Mekudeshet Mimen. And then there was an Ezrat Kohanim, even further in. She'ein Yisrael Nichnasim Nisham. And a regular Yisrael was not allowed to go into the Ezrat Kohanim. Ela b'shat tarcheihem, unless they needed to. Why would a regular Joe, like me, who was Yisrael, need to walk into the Ezrat Kohanim, which was usually the area reserved for the Kohanim? L'smicha, or smicha, when they laid their hands on the animals. If you need to lay your hands on the animals, that was done with the Kohanim in the Ezrat Kohanim. You can go into that. L'shchita, if the Yisrael was intending to shech the animal, which they were allowed to, you didn't need a Kohen to shech the korban. And litznufa. Snufa was the special wave offering which the Kohanim did with the person bringing the korban up and down and side to side, etc. So even if you were not a Kohen, you were allowed to go into the inner area of the Ezra's Kohanim for those reasons. What about women? Were women allowed to do that too? So I brought you some references here in the footnote. Obviously, everyone going into the Beit HaMikdash in each area had to be sufficiently tahor. But most people, most Meforshim understand, A, that the Ezra's Nashim was a mixed area. There were many men in the Ezra's Nashim as well as women. It wasn't like we understand today an Ezra's Nashim, which is basically women and no men. Unless you go to like the Shacharis Minyan in the Shtibel when there are men sitting all around the Ezra's Nashim. That's another question. But then the Ezra's Nashim was a very busy area where a lot of other things happened. So there were certainly men and women milling around together there. And then in the inner area, would women have the need, halachically, to go into the Ezrat Kohanim? Well, women did not usually do smicha on the animals, but they did, or they could, do shchita. A woman is kosher to shecht in the Beit HaMikdash, and they might need to do tznufa as well. So according to most Meforshim, it seems that women did, from time to time, go into the Ezrat Kohanim as well. And the Ezrat Nashim seems to be a very mixed area. Have a look in page 3. I've brought you a handy-dandy diagram, so you can get a feel for what I'm talking about. Hopefully you'll see the women's courtyard. The Ezrat Nashim is a big square area with four major offices in each corner. And as I said, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of activity going in. And then you go up the steps into the court of the Yisraelim, and then to Ezra's Kohanim, and then into the temple building itself. That was clearly reserved only for Kohanim. And therefore, things may have been a little bit more mixed than people think. However, it's not so straightforward. There is a very tense exchange in the Gemara in number 5, which is very interesting in and of itself, but there's a point that comes out of this. Have a look in number 5. Tana Rabbanan. La'acha p'tirasa shel Rabbi Meir. When Rabbi Meir died, Amalahem Rabbi Yehuda, the Talmidim, Rabbi Yehuda informed his Talmidim, Al yikansu Talmidi Rabbi Meir lakan. Don't let the Talmidim of Rabbi Meir back into the yeshiva. Mipnei shekantranim heim, because they just cause trouble. They're just cheppers. You know, they just cause to. A lot of little mod Torah by him. They don't come to learn Torah. And the kapchani b'halachas by him. They come to irritate me with the silly questions. So please don't let them in. Anyway, you can't keep people out of the base of Medrash sometimes. Yachat sumchus v'nichnas. Sumchus pushed his way in. He was a Talmud of Rabbi Meir. And then he said, Amalehem, and he said, Kach shanei Rabbi Meir. This is what Rabbi Meir taught. Hamakadesh b'chelkai. Interesting question. You have a Kohen, and he has his chelek, his piece of meat that he's got, he's given to eat in the Ezrat Kohanim, and he says, you know something? I would like to use this meat as kesef kiddushin. I have a wife, she's here with me, and we'd like to get married right here, right now in the Beit HaMikdash, and I'm going to get married by giving her my portion of meat to eat. Interesting. Says the Gemara here, he says, Paskin ben kotcha kadoshim, ben kotcha kalim, loy kiddush. It didn't work. I'm not getting into the reasons why it doesn't work. Please don't try this at home in case you're a Kohen working in the Beit HaMikdash. Doesn't work. You won't be married. Kas Rabbi Yehuda aleim. Rabbi Yehuda got very angry with them. Amar lahem, he said, loy kacha amarti lachem. Isn't this exactly what I just told you? Al yikan sumi talmidi Rabbi Meir lekan. Don't bring these people into here. This nation can't run in lane. They just cause trouble. But loy lilmot tarehem baim. Ela lekapchan behalachatem baim. They come to ask silly questions. Why is this a silly question, he says. Why is this a frivolous question? V'chi isha be'ezrat minayim. Why would you find a woman in the Ezrat Kohanim in the first place? What's this woman doing here that she's getting married? You see from here that Rabbi Yehuda's understanding is, okay, maybe technically women might be allowed into the inner areas for certain reasons, but you'd never find a woman there. I'm a Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi answered and said, just calm down. Yomri, people are going to say, Meir Shachav, Rabbi Meir died. Yehuda cast, Rabbi Yehuda got angry. Rabbi Yossi Shasak, and I, Rabbi Yossi, was quiet. It can't be. Dibrei Torah Mati Ela, what's going to be with the Torah? I'll tell you why there could be women in the Ezra's Nashim. Ki Ein Adam Asi Lekabu Kiddushin Lebito Ba'azara. Couldn't you have a father accepting Kiddushin for his daughter, maybe standing in the Ezra's Kohanim? I mean, the woman might not be there, but the Kiddushin could happen. The Ein Isha Asui Lasot La Shaliach. Maybe the woman could have sent a Shaliach. Lekabu Kiddushin Ba'azara. The odd. And I'll tell you something else he said. Dachachava Nichnasa. My, what if the woman pushed herself in? She pushed into the Ezra's Kohanim. She's there. So it's not such a silly question. So Rabbi Yehuda wants to say, it's very unlikely a woman would be there. And Rabbi Yossi said, okay, but there are women who could be there. And Josephus actually seems to say, from the Second Temple, that women really weren't there very much at all. Look at number six, since there was a partition built for the women on that site, as the proper place for them praying, there needed to be a second gate for them. The women had to have their own gate, because they had their own prayer area. This gate was cut out of its wall over against the first gate. On the other side, there was also one southern and one northern gate, through which there was a passage into the court of the women, into the Ezra's Nashim. For as to the outer gates, the women were not allowed to pass through them, says Josephus. Nor when they went through their own gate could they go beyond their own wall. So when you ask, when you have an entrance to the kotel and you have a men's side and a women's side, oh, did they do that during the time of the Beit HaMikdash? Maybe. Josephus seems to think they did. So it's not entirely clear what's going on in terms of the Ezrat Nashim. There seem to be areas which are restricted for women, with no men there, but on the other hand, there are a lot of men moving around the Ezrat Nashim, and there may even be women going into the Ezrat Yisrael as well, or even the Ezrat Kohanim for their needs. What about the first Beis HaMikdash? Was there an Ezrat Nashim in the first Beis HaMikdash? So it's not 100% clear. There's no reference to the Ezrat Nashim in the Chumash. It doesn't say when they built the Mishkan that they made an Ezrat Nashim. However, it talks about the women who were crowding by the gate. Look on number 7, please, over the page. In Shemot, it says, V'yat et ha-ki'or. They made, when they built the Mishkan, the ki'or, the washing basin, nechoshit out of copper, the etkano on the base, nechoshit out of copper, b'mar'ot ha-tzva'ot, the out of the mirrors of the masses of women, ashet sav'u petach o'el mo'ed. They came, these women, to the entrance of the Oel Moed, and Unklus says that that's where they came to daven. They didn't go into the Oel Moed, they came to the entrance of the Oel Moed. So it sounds like there may indeed have been some kind of women's area even then. And in the first temple as well, the Rambam says clearly in Hilchos Beis HaBechira that the second temple was modeled very much on the first temple, with additions from Yechezkel of the third temple. It's very interesting. Yechezkel gives the Nebuah of the third temple. And then after that, Zechariah gives the Nebuah of how to build the second temple. It's very interesting that the third temple plan comes before the second temple plan. And when they built the second temple, they built it based on A, the first temple, and B, the images from the third temple that Yechezkel had told. It's very interesting. So there seems to be indications that there was an Ezrat Nashim there too. In Yehoshaphat, with Yehoshaphat in Devarim Yamim, it talks about the Azarah Hadashah, a new din that they made in the Azara. So even though it's not clear, I brought you some notes, it sounds like there may have been. Now, one thing is for sure. In the second temple, there was an Ezrat Nashim. Did the women have a special place to sit? So here we get into the better known sources, which is the whole story of Sukkot. Look at number 8, please. The Mishnah in Kalim says as follows. Ezrat Nashim, the original Ezrat Nashim in the Second Temple, Chalaka haita b'rishona. It was chalak. It was smooth. But then, the Hikifua Kesutra, but then they built a balcony around it. Shehanashim ro'ot milamalan, so the women could see from above. V'ha'anashim milamalan, and the men could stand below. Kedei shelo yehu mu'uravim. Because we don't want the men and the women to mix. Oh, this is already beginning to sound a little bit more like the shul that I grew up in, where the women are sitting in the balcony and the men are sitting down below. I don't know about the not mixing, because the kiddush was pretty mixed, but here it doesn't talk about the kiddush, although we'll see soon what was going on before they built the balcony. So it sounds like they built the balcony so the women would sit upstairs and the men would sit downstairs. Why did they build this balcony? So this already we need to get into the whole story of how this separation originally happened. Number 9. The Mishnah in Sukkah says, Misha loira simcha spesa shueva loira simcha miyamav. If you never witnessed the simcha spesa shueva on Sukkot, then you never saw simcha. But Motzi Yontav Rishon, on Motzi Yontav Shel Chag, of the first Yontav of Chag, Yardu le'Ezer Nashim, they would all come down. Everyone would come down into Ezer Nashim. Umetak Nisham Tikkun Gadol. And they made a big tikkun, and they changed it. They made something special in the Ezer Nashim. Now, of course, what's going on in the Ezer Nashim? All of the juggling and the simcha and the singing and the dancing, and they made a tikkun. So this is the Gemara, number 9 as follows, in the middle. The Motzi Yontav, my tikkun gadol, what was it that they brought in? So Amar Rebbe Loza says, Ka'oisa Shishaninu, like we said, Chalaka Haita Berishona, originally says the Mishnah in Midas, the Ezra's Nashim was smooth, the walls were smooth. Ikibu Gazustra, and they put a balcony around it. Women above, men below. How did that evolve? Tan Rabbanan, so the Brisa says as follows. So they tried three different things to stop everybody mixing. Originally the women were inside, and the men were outside. But it all turned into a mingling scene, and they said, this is no good. What do you mean inside and outside? Because, again, what's happening? All the activities happening on Sukkot in the Ezrat Nashim. So originally they said, you know something? Most of the year there aren't that many women in the Beit HaMikdash anyway. Now there are thousands and thousands of women. They've all come for Chag. Women would often come for Chag, for Alila Regal, even though they might not be obligated, but they come to bring Korbanos, etc. How are we going to separate the men and the women? So plan one was, let's put the women inside, next to all the action, and let's push the men outside onto Har HaBayit, and they can look from a distance. Which is interesting that was the first suggestion, that the women should have the front seats, and the men should have the back seats. That didn't work. We'll see Rav Moshe Feinstein explains later why that didn't work. Everyone was mingling in the gates, trying to get through. The men were pushing in to get to the front. That didn't work. Okay. So they said, let's reverse it. Let's have the women outside on Har HaBayit, and put the men inside. So I die in Hayubani de Kalas Rosh. That didn't work either. So they said, okay, you know something, it's not going to work. Let's build a balcony. Women upstairs, men downstairs. So the Gemara is unhappy with this answer. Look at number 10. How could they do such a thing? And this is where we'll see soon, Rav Moshe Feinstein is going to pick up the status of Mechitza soon. Hakol b'chtav miyad Hashem. Alai his skill. Says David HaMelech, everything came to me from Hashem as to how to build. When he's telling Shlomo how to build the Beit HaMikdash, he's saying, I'm not making this up. I was given plans. I have a nevuah as to how to build it. Kol melachot hatavnit. You can't change it. This is how God says to build it. So how could Chazal come later and just stick a balcony on? You can't just change the Beit HaMikdash. It's coming from nevuah. They didn't have a nevuah. So the Gemara answers, Amar Rav. Rav answers, Kra Ashkechu. They found a posik for Dorosh, and they learnt it. What is that posik in Zechariah? V'safta ha'aritz mishpachot, mishpachot levad, mishpachot beit David levad, v'nesheyem levad. Now, we've had this verse before in this year. This is a posik in Zechariah that deals with the hesped, the ultimate hesped, la'atit lava, in the future, either for Mashiach ben Yosef. Remember, we had a shir on Mashiach, and we dealt with that. Or for the Yetzer Hara, when in future the Yetzer Hara is removed, whatever that means, I'm not getting into it now. But whatever this hesped is for, the men will be on one side, and the women will be on the other, says Zechariah. Amru, so the rabbi said, look, haloi dvarim kal v'chaymer. This is an A4 to your argument, all the more so. Mala'atid lavo, if in the future she'oiskin behesped, excuse me, when they're giving a hesped, which nobody's very excited about a hesped, how much kalas rosh can there be at a hesped? Ve'ein yetzahara sholet behem, and there's no yetzahara either, because maybe it's in the future, there's no yetzahara left. Amrua Torah and Nashim Labad v'Nashim Labad. Men have to be on one side, women have to be on the other side. Achshav, now, she'oskin v'simcha, that we're in the middle of Chag, and everyone's going crazy, and it's an atmosphere of excitement and festivity. The Yetzahara sholet behem, and there's plenty Yetzahara going on. Don't worry. Alachat kama v'kama, how much more so should you have men and women separate? And that's why they did it. Now, think about this. How can they use a pasuk in Zechariah to justify changing the plans of the Beis HaMikdash if the whole thing came from David through Nevuah? So we'll see Rav Moshe ask this question soon when he talks about Mechitza. But this seems to be how they did it. And indeed, the Rambam says this in Mishneh Torah, that they built a special balcony. It's not entirely clear whether they left it there. There are some sources that seem to indicate once they built it already, they left it there. But most people seem to say, no, it was just there for Sukkot. And they took it down every year, and they put it back up every year. But one way or the other, they ended up with a balcony with women upstairs and men downstairs. Now, Atkan is the introduction. So that's what happened in the Beis HaMikdash. They had a lot of mingling, but they also had, specifically on Sukkot, very clear separation. So let's get into the three reasons I want to deal with today. As to how does this translate into the shul today? So the first reason, go over to page 5, please, is, well, what is, how do we create the architecture of a shul? A shul is a mikdash ma'at. A shul is a mini bet mikdash. Have a look at the pasuk in Yechezkel number 13. Lachein emor, koi amar Hashem Elokim. This is what God wants. Ki hirchaktim zagoyim. I have sent the Jews all around the non-Jewish world. V'kihivatitim, and I've scattered them around Ba'aratzot in all the different lands. Ve'hi lahem lemikdash ma'at. But I will be a mini temple for them, Ba'aratzot Hashem Ba'usham. Wherever they go, even though they can't have a real Beis HaMikdash, they will have a Mikdash Ma'at. What is that a reference to? Number 14, the Gemara in Megillah says, Ve'hei lahem Mikdash Ma'at, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Eilu Bati Knesios, Bati Midrash Hashem Ba'Bavel. Bavel means the diaspora. This is the idea of shuls, and Bati Medrash, and Yeshivot, etc. in Bavel, and Darash Rava, so too, the Pasuk, Hashem Ma'on Ata Hayitalanu, you are a refuge, a sanctuary for us, Elu Bati Knesis or Bati Midrash. So, it seems on a certain level that the shuls we have today are modeled on the Beis HaMikdash. And this, it manifests itself in many ways. Look at this interesting Midrash in number 15, Rav Huna Amar Kol She'enu Nichnas Lebet HaKneset, Ba'olam Hazeh, if you never went into a shul in this world, Einu Nichnas Lebet HaKneset Olam Haba, you won't get to go to shul in the next world, whatever that means. Whatever the Bet Knesset is in the next world, I assume it's somewhere you'd want to be, if you didn't go into the Bet Knesset in this world, you won't make it next. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hamitpalel B'tocha Ba'olam Hazeh, this is the key, if you daven in a shul, in this world, ki'ilu mitpalel bebet hamikdash. It's as if you'd stepped into the Beit HaMikdash, and he brings this pasuk from Yechezkel that it's a mikdash ma'at. And many of the halachot of the more mikdash, of kovod rosh, the way you're meant to behave in a shul, are learned out from the Beit HaMikdash, that you're not meant to be frivolous, you're not meant to be lightheaded, etc. I'm not going to go through all of number 16, but the Sefer Yireim, one of the Balei HaTosfos, learns line by line all of the dinim of how to behave in a shul from the dinim of how to behave in the Mikdash. The Tfilot, as we know, are modeled on the Beit HaMikdash. Shacharit is keneged the Korban Tamid in the morning. Mincha is keneged the Korban Tamid in the afternoon. So too, an interesting halacha, number 18. Asur listo davar mi beta knesset. You are not allowed to break or knock down anything in a shul, says the Shulchan Aruch. Ela im keino te'amunat divnot, unless you're doing it to refurbish the shul. You can't start chipping bits off the defacing writing, you know, underneath the shtenders, like I was here or whatever it is. You can't do that, says the Mishnah Berurah. Why? Because you learn it from the halachas of the Beit HaMikdash. You're not allowed to destroy the Mizbeach, the Hechel, etc. Just like you're not allowed to destroy the Beit HaMikdash, you're not allowed to destroy the Beit Knesset, because the Beit Knesset is modeled entirely on the Beit HaMikdash. So, when the mixed seating debate came in number 19, the Hinei Chalil Alachem, says the Maram Shik, Rav Moshe Shik, a student of the Chasam Sofi, says, God forbid, HaKsherim Nishtok, how can the K'sherim the people who are kosher in this respect be quiet. Adavah ha'pritza she'asu ha'chatsufin nahe. That the chutzpedik people have done, ki midina anu mechuyavim la'asot hefsek bein ezrat anashim le'ezrat anashim. We have an obligation to make a distinction between the men's area and the women's area. Kamo shehaya bebet hamidash, ezrat anashim lachud, ve'ezrat anashim lachud. Just like in the mikdash there was a women's area and a men's area, so to ensure there has to be a women's area and a men's area. Although we've already said that even in the mikdash, it wasn't entirely clear that there was a separation for most of the year, but certainly on Sukkot, there was a separation. Rav Kook also writes in number 20, we have to do everything we can to draw close, in every way we are allowed to, the mikdash shei ma'at halalu, in our mini mikdash, in our shul, Monot Hashchina, these residences of the Shchina Shalanu, Bate Knesset Yoteinu, in our shul, L'tchonet HaKedusha Shel Beit HaGadol V'HaGadosh. Okay, we tchonet HaKedusha, we have to get closer to the kind of Kedusha that they had in the temple. She'yibane b'mherev yameinu, u'Kedushat Beit HaMikdash Haita L'Avoteinu L'Kav HaMidah. Our Beit HaMikdash was a clear yardstick, if you like, shechalku gam bebet haknesiyot shebachol moshvateim, and so too our shuls in all the places we live have to have ezrat anashim levad veezrat nashim levad kmo shehaya hadavar kein bebet hamikdash. And Rav Soloveitchik says the same thing. Number 21, a synagogue with mixed seating arrangements forfeits its sanctity and its halachic status of mikdash ma'at, and is unfit for prayer and avodah shebelev. And he goes on, as we seem to say, that no one's allowed to come there, even Rosh Hashanah, even Yom Kippur, etc. So reason number one for the necessity for mechitza is Beit HaMikdash parallels into Beit HaKnesset, and Beit HaKnesset is a mikdash ma'at. That's reason number one. Reason number two is, what's this thing with separation? Do we really need to separate men and women? And if so, when? And if so, how? So we're going to say, is in this section we're going to see quite an extensive quote from an important tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, which I think you'll find very informative. But first of all, do men and women have to be separated in public areas? This is a tense question, and it depends to some degree on your background. But let's bring a few sources on this. Number 22. Rav Pinchas Omer, Erev Shabbos Amdu Yisrael Bahar Sinai. On the Friday, getting ready for Har Sinai, which happened on Shabbos, the Jewish people stood there. Orachim, they were arranged, anashim levad, v'nashim levad. The men in one side, the women on the other side. Amalai Kodesh Baruch Hu Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, lech emol lehem lebenot Yisrael. Im rotzot hem lekabel et Torah. Go and ask the women if they want to receive the Torah. Says the Gemara, says it here, the Midrash. V'lama shalu nashim. Why would you ask the women first if they want to receive the Torah? Lefishe dachem shel anashim holchim achrei dachem shel anashim. Because if the women say yes, then the men will do what they're told. That's the Derech HaChaim. If the women are into it, the men will go along with it for a while. So first of all, ask the women, and if they'll take it, it'll be fine. Shneimar koytam ale beit Yaakov elu anashim v'tagel lebnei Yisrael elu ha'anashim. So on a midrashic level, it sounds that there was some level of separation of men and women. The Gemara also talks about the following. Number 23, Abaya diel gulbi. Abaya would put down gulbi, which are like jugs. Rava dier kana. Rava would put like canes. What are they doing? What's this for? Rashi explains. Makom kfutzat anashim v'nashim. Where men and women would gather together. All a drasha, for the Rav's drasha. All a chupa, or for a wedding. Hayam tzadeh kan kanim shel cheres. They would put little jugs between the men and the women. Harbeh, v'neihem. She'im yavo zeh etzel zeh, says Rashi. That if the men began to, and the women began to walk up to each other, it would be like an alarm. You know, they would start to sound these little jugs that make a noise, and they would know that there was frivolity going on, and they would jump in to fix it straight away. It sounds from this that it was an accepted thing that men would be on in one place at public gatherings and women would be in another. Furthermore, this balcony of Zechariah, based on Zechariah, the posik of the balcony in the Beit HaMikdash, based on the posik in Zechariah, the Yerushalmi calls it Dvar Torah. And we'll see soon why it calls the posik in Zechariah a Dvar Torah. The truth is that one of the earliest sources that we have for actual men and women praying separately is a Yalkut Shimoni. Look in number 25. So Haya Machanecha Kodesh, we've not seen this pasuk before. That your camp, your environment in which you're living in has to be Kadosh. Tana de Be'eliyahu, so he quotes Tana de Be'eliyahu, Lo Yamod Betocha Bik'avi Yitpalel. You shouldn't stand in the middle of a bikah, in the middle of an open field, and daven. Kama Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Ovdei Elilim. Because that seems to be an idol worship type method of davening, to stand in the middle of a field, you should be in an enclosed area. V'lo yamod b'rishut harabim, don't stand in the public thoroughfare, v'yitpalel, and daven. Mitnei daf habriyot, because you'll be, your mind will be all on the people pushing past. You won't be able to concentrate. V'lo yamod bein hanashim, v'yitpalel. And men shouldn't be standing in the middle of women to daven, it says, mitnei daf hanashim, because the women will be on their mind. More about that next week. But you should make for yourself an area where you're secluded, not davening in a big crowd, not davening in a group of men and women together, etc. That seems to be one of the first sources. Why not? So the Rambam is very clear in two places. It's about mingling. It's not necessarily about looking, and we'll see how important that is. The Rambam says very clearly on Chag HaSukkot, they have this special separation. Look at the end of 26. Kedei shelo yitarvu Elohim Eilu. So they wouldn't mix with each other. Go over the page. Similarly, he says in Beit HaBachira, he says they would put the balcony up. Kedei shelo yihiyu mu'uravim. Mu'uravim. So they wouldn't be mixed together. Ah, could they see each other? Well, let me ask you, when the women are standing on the balcony, can the women see the men and can the men see the women? Pashtus, yes. It doesn't say that the men were standing just underneath the balcony and the women were just over the men. And Rav Moshe Feinstein, we'll see now, the next seven sources are extracts from a very important tshuva we need to look at in some detail. Rav Moshe Feinstein clearly says that the mechitza, the purpose of the mechitza is not to stop the women seeing the men and not to stop the men seeing the women. You do not need a curtain over a balcony, he says. You don't need that. Because there's no problem for people to see each other, and we'll see why he says that in a minute. I'm not telling you he'd say it was a bad idea to have a curtain, that's a different question, but he says you don't need it. In 1945, Rav Moshe wrote a tshuva. And let's have a look at some extracts from this tshuva together, and see what we can make of it. Look at number 28, over the page on page 7. V'hine etzem hadin. What is the halacha here? She'af im anashim heim betzad echad. What if the men sit on one side? The hanashim betzad acher, and the women sit on the other side. Without a mechitza. Is that okay? Says Rav Moshe, asurim hein liyot v'lo mechitza. No, it's asur for them to be without a mechitza, and surely even if they're on separate sides. V'hu lefi ani adaiti dina d'oraita. This is a din d'oraita. This is a Torah law. Where does it say in the Torah, thou shalt not sit without a mechitza? V'raya mi sukkah. I want to bring you a proof from sukkah. The Gemara says, how could they build a balcony in the temple? On Chag, it says that David the Melech had a nevuah. It was all given to him, the plans from God. How can they just get and change that? You're not allowed to change the Azor. But Teretz, Rav, and Rav answers, says Rav Moshe in the Gemara there. The Krash, Kuchuchit, Sarach, Lahavdil, Anashim, Minashim, Kedepeish, Rashi, Einstein. They said it comes from the Pasuk in Zechariah. Upashut, it's very clear, says Rav Moshe. Shekavanat ha-tehutu. What is the real reason behind the answer? Shelechein hu kemufurish shitzarech la'asot hazizi v'akizusros, v'loi hutzruch le'hama zeh alidei gada choseh v'natan anavi. I don't need to hear directly from the prophets, from Gad and from Natan. If you imagine David HaMelech is sitting learning through with Gad and with Natan, Anavi, etc., how to build a Beit HaMikdash. I don't need them to tell you that you need a mechitza. Sheyidu lahem al pi Hashem melechet atavnit. Because the mechitza must be a Torah requirement, says Rav Moshe Feinstein. Otherwise, it would have had to be said explicitly. What the Gemara is saying here is that built into the nevuah of Gad and Natan about how to build the Beit HaMikdash is, well, of course, anything that the Torah itself requires is obviously required. And therefore, if they were able to change the layout of the Beit HaMikdash and add these balconies, and yet be subject to the nevuah of Gad and Natan, then it must be that this requirement was an even earlier requirement than that, says Rav Moshe, and was built into the system. Obviously, someone's going to ask, are you allowed to eat pork in the Beit HaMikdash? Well, it doesn't say that you're not. No, because it says you're not allowed to eat pork anywhere. So why would I need to say you're not allowed to eat treif in the Beis HaMikdash? I don't need to say that. You know you can't eat treif. So too, if they're able to build a balcony of this kind, it must be, says Rav Moshe, that it's built in as a Torah requirement. The im hayah zeh rak isud rabbanan. Because if it had only been a rabbinic requirement, loy hayah shayach lemei mashehu mimele bichlal ksav ksav. You couldn't have said that the rabbinic requirement would override. It has to be, so just in the mechanics to override, it has to be a Torah requirement. So that's his first proof, that the requirement of mechitza is doraisa. Ah, it comes from a pasuk in Zechariah. Generally speaking, this is the second quote from Rav Moshe in 29, Rav Moshe raises a fascinating halakhic question. We sometimes learn mitzvot from Nevi'im. For example, on Eich Shabbat, we learn from Yeshaya. The fast of Tisha B'Av and Sheva Asa B'Tamuz and Asaras B'Tavis, we learn from the Pasuk in Zechariah. Do these things have a status of De'oraita or not, of a Torah law? And the answer is, they do not. Actually, very interestingly, they have a kind of intermediate status. It's called Divrei Kabbalah. There's stuff from the Torah, which is Min HaTorah. There's rabbinic innovation, which is later Midrabbanon. And the middle layer is what's called Divrei Kabbalah, nothing to do with mysticism, yeah? But Divrei Kabbalah, received from the Nevi'im. Generally speaking, they are a level below the Oraisa. Says Rav Moshe, so why are they taking this pasuk in Zechariah and giving it Torah status? And he says, a very interesting thing, because it doesn't come out as a specific mitzvah. Meaning, when Zechariah says, you shall fast on the fast of the 10th month and the fast of the 5th month, etc., etc., then he's saying a new mitzvah. That mitzvah can't be on a level of a Torah mitzvah. But this pasuk in Zechariah of the separate hesped, where the women are sitting there and the men are sitting there, it didn't come, says Rav Moshe, as a do or don't do. It doesn't come as a mitzvah. It just comes as a statement. So then there are many statements in the Navi that are taken as muvan me'ilav, and he says that indicates that they are actually on a Torah level. Think of the number of things that it says in Yechezkel. Certain different halachas that Yechezkel just introduces as if everybody always knew them. Some of these halachas, says Rav Moshe, may be Torah Misinai, and therefore it's introduced by the Navi, but it came before. He says this is the same status here of Mechitza, that is true as well. It was a Torah status. Now, if this is the case, he says, looking number 30, we mean Mele Chazino, we see, Misugi de Sukkah, from what we see in Sukkah, the Af im Haita Mechitza, even if there is a Mechitza, but it could still end up with mingling. Yesh adayin oto isu midoraita. You still have the same problem. Meaning it's not good enough just to have a mechitza. Why? What's its proof? Because remember the first two attempts when the women sat inside and the men sat outside. And the men sat inside and the women sat outside. But it didn't work. And they still had to change the structure of the mikdash. Was there a mechitza between the inside and the outside? Yes! The walls of the Azara. You can't get a better mechitza than that. Why didn't it work? Because everyone's pushing in and pushing out, and the men are coming through and the women are coming through, and it didn't work. You see from here that a mechitza is not good enough. You need to have a mechitza that actually stops the mingling, which is not just a regular mechitza. And that's why if you go over the page to 32, he says some interesting halachot he's learning from this. Hayotim is there. What comes out from this is Gamba Bati Knesset Shemit Kapsim Shama Nashim and Nashim Leit Palel. So it's men are getting together to daven. Tov Yotel Asot Gezutzah. I think says the best thing is to build a balcony. Just like they had in the Mikdash. Shenashim Yulamala, put the women above. The im ne'ezetam kashel asot gezutzah. If you can't build a balcony, the shul, the architecture won't allow it. Trichin asot mechitza mamash. You have to make a mechitza. But it has to be mechitza that works. The loy sagi b'mashen nechshava mechitza lechol davar. It can't just be a technical mechitza. Remember in Hilchos Sukkah, how high does a mechitza have to be a mechitza in Hilchos Sukkah? 10 fucking high. Can it have gaps in it? Of course, as long as it's not, porous merubah me'ahama, there are all sorts of technicalities with mechitza. It could have gaps, it just has to be majority built and minority gap. What's the use of a mechitza which is 10 tefachim high down here and has more gas than mechitza? Is it a technical mechitza, says Rav Moshe? Of course it is. But does it work? Of course not. Why? Because the whole point of the mechitza is to stop the men and the women mingling. Because he says here, that go four lines from the bottom. Aval, mistaba l'ti ani zaiti. Now comes his leniency. Shisagi b'mechitza gvoa ad achak tefayim. It's good enough to have a mechitza up to the shoulders. Shaharikazinim, because what do we see? Shahamachikta Ainu Mitsad Iso Histaklut. Because there's no problem with people seeing each other. There's no problem. You don't need to have an opaque mechitza that nobody can see through. The only function of the mechitza, says Rav Moshe, is to stop the mingling. Once you stop the mingling, once you have something this high, then you can't start passing things over the mechitza, and the mechitza is good enough to stop the mingling. I mean, you could start throwing sweets over or whatever it is. Agav, where the minag of throwing sweets around the base of Knesset is, like, how that fits into the COVID rosh of the Beit Knesset is an interesting question. Sometimes when things get a little bit out of hand and everyone's throwing sweets at candies at everybody else, you wonder sometimes whether this is actually the... I'm a bit of a yekker at heart, I'm sorry. In London, I daven about it sometimes by the yekim, and if you start throwing sweets around the yekkers or shuls, then yeah, they'll start throwing you out of the door. So, I'm not such a killjoy, it's fine. The point here, he says, though, is that there's no problem people seeing each other. And therefore, he's happy with the mechitza. He says the last line, Ulechem mechitza gvoa ad acha ktefaim, if it goes to the shoulders, shemistabish she'ein lavoli de kalod rosh, yesh lahatir. Because we're not worried that people are going to be staring inappropriately. Now, in today's world, are people dressed appropriately? We're going to get that to the next stage and then next week. But the Rav Moshe doesn't seem to be concerned with that. So how high does Mechitza have to be? For who gvoa gimel amos? He thinks gimel amos. Three amos. Shehem yud chet tfachim, which is 18 tfachim. Now how big is a tefach? About 3 and a bit inches. So how big does your Mechitza have to be? 3 and a bit times 18. What's that? 18, 36. 54 and a bit inches. How high is that? Well, 5 feet is 60 inches, right? So like 4 foot six. Around 4 foot six, which is around this on me. Okay? So, he says that's good enough for your mechitza, and then he debates and he says, well, maybe you could say that the Beit HaMikdash had a higher level of Kedusha than the Beit HaKnesset. But he says no, because once you start saying God's name in Tfilah, and the reason we have Kedusha, the thing we call Kedusha in Shul, is to introduce more Kedusha into the service. He thinks that for sure it has a din of a Doraita, whether when you're saying Divrei Torah or whether you're praying. According to Rav Moshe, you would have to have a Mechitza for a Shir as well, it says. If the Rav is giving a Shir, and the women are sitting on this side and the men are sitting on that side, he seems to say, no, that has a din of Kedusha, you need a Mechitza down the middle. And in fact, when Rav Moshe is pushed and says, well, 1 second, do you think you need a Mechitza outside Shul? What if you have a Shir in someone's house? What if you have a concert? Do you need a Mechitza there as well? So Rav Moshe says, yeah, actually, why not? Maybe you need a Mechitza anywhere, because the problem here is mingling. Look at number 34. Aval muchrachim ktzat lomar. I think you have to say, he concludes, shedin zehu midoraita b'chol makom kibbutz. Whenever you have a kibbutz, a gathering of men and women together, I think the truth is this will apply. Shari ha-hesped, shal-atit, shal-lod, shal-lamedim, misham, the hesped that they will be giving for the death of Mashiach ben Yosef, that's not in a shul. That's down in the field somewhere, it seems. And therefore, he thinks that you need to have a mechitza wherever you are, if there are men and women together. And he thinks that's doraisa as well. However, it's not so straightforward, because in a later tshuva, a few years later, he writes that actually you may be allowed to have mixed seating at a wedding, and they asked him, well, 1 second, you just wrote that you can't have a mechitza, you can't have a mixed gathering without a mechitza, and he seems to pull back from that, and at Rav Moshe Feinstein's wedding that he made for his own children, he didn't have a mechitza at all of those weddings. Rav Moshe Tendler's wedding, I'm reliably informed, did not have a mechitza for mixed seating. That's a whole different question. And we had 2 years ago, if you remember, in summer 2016, I trust you have excellent memories. In summer 2016, we had a whole series of shirim on weddings as approaching when my daughter was getting married. And one whole shir was dedicated to mixed seating and weddings. And I brought you the two tshuvas of Rav Moshe, and I brought you a reference to it in the footnotes as well. But soft, Rav Moshe feels that in a shul, certainly when there's prayers going on or a shir going on, there is a din doraita of mechitza. Now, Rav Soloveitchik actually said a little bit different. Rav Soloveitchik said that the din doraita was not to have mixed seating. But as long as the men were on one side and the women were on the other side, that was okay. You didn't need a mechitza. You only needed a mechitza on a rabbinic level as a siag l'Torah, and that was a little bit more makel than Rav Moshe. And I know that there are many rabbonim that, if they are giving a shiur, certainly do not require a mechitza. They have women sitting on one side, women sitting, men sitting on the other. But there are many rabbonim who have no problem with a mixture and men sitting with the women together as well. And I'm not really getting into that subject, as you can look around you and see. I'm not really getting into that subject quite now, but at least in terms of the shul and the mechitza, you see where he's coming from. So the first two reasons are, number one, the shul is modeled on the temple. The temple had some level of separation, at least sometimes. Number two, mingling is bad. And therefore you have to have some kind of separation in order to create that atmosphere of COVID rush, and that certainly appears in a applies in a shul. The third reason, which I want to finish with, brings in some fascinating halachic issues, which is, what is the status of an ancient minhag b'Yisrael? And I'll show you next time, Be'ezrat Hashem, that the research clearly shows that men and women really did not sit together in shuls from time immemorial. People sometimes say, oh, well, there are pictures of the Kotel in the 1920s, and there's no mechitza there. The reason for that is, they weren't allowed to bring a mechitza there. The British absolutely prohibited any kinds of furniture, benches, shtenders, mechitzas. They were not allowed to bring. In fact, one of the things that triggered the Hebron massacres and the riots, etc., was a number of people bringing in on Tisha B'Av furniture to the Kotel, saying, this is ridiculous, why can't we have a proper shul here at the Kotel? And that sparked off a whole series of other things. Obviously, there are many causes to these things, and they were waiting to happen, but you can't bring any proof from the pictures from the 1920s of the Kotel, because there was a lot of other things going on there as well. Leaving aside the question of whether the Kotel is a shul or not, which of course is a very controversial one with the women of the wall, etc. What is the status of the Kotel today? And does it depend on which bit of the Kotel? Is it a shul? Is it a public gathering place? I'm not getting into that now. Maybe another time. But if you look, please, in the Rambam, in source number 35, I want to show you a couple of things just at the end. So the Rambam says here as follows. Bet Din HaGadol Shev Yerushalayim Heimeika Torah Sheval Peh. The Sanhedrin was the main source of Torah Sheval Peh. From here, laws go out to all of the Jewish people. The Torah places a reliance in those people. This is a mitzvah asay to follow the Sanhedrin. You have to go with the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin has absolute authority to create Torah Shebal Peh in the generations that came after Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, he says here, number in bed, if you don't follow the Sanhedrin, other belotase, then that's also a negative mitzvah. Whether it's material that came in a chain passed down from Sinai, came Torah Shebal Peh, the echad varim shelim du mipi datam ve'echad min amidu shatarim toshabahem, or whether it was one of the things that Chazal learns out through the rules of interpretation, and here's the key here, or echad varim she'asam siag l'Torah, but sometimes the rabbis made for a fence around the Torah, masha ashat tzricha, what is needed for the time, ve'hein ha'gzerot, these are decrees, takanot, institutions, the minhagot. Minhagot. What are minhagot? And are they the same as minhagim? See, says the Rambam here that certain things were instituted as communal minhagim, and they have a status of Torah Shabbat Alper, just like the Gezerot, the Drabonons in other areas. Go over to page 36, and we'll draw from Rav Cook in a second. It says, Bet Din Shegazru Gezerot or Tiknu Takona, Vinhigu Minhag. If the Beis Din brought in any of these things, including Minhag, Upasha Chadava B'chol Yisrael, and that spread through the Jewish people, the Awad Achreihem Bet Din Acher, and a later Bet Din came, Ubikesh Levatel Dvarim Arshanim, and wanted to cancel them, they can't do that. They have to be greater than the earlier Beis Din, and then he goes on to say, and in certain areas, that even if they're greater, once you have a minhag, which is introduced into the community by the earlier authorities, and there's a debate who are they are exactly, is it just Sanhedrin, is it Chazal, etc., you cannot change that. That has a status of Gezeira Takana Minhagot, which is underpinned by two mitzvahs d'oraisa. which is the mitzvah of Alapara Torah Asher Yerucha Tasu, and Lo Sasa Min Adav Rasha Yerucha Yamin Esmol. Meaning, it's not, even if it's rabbinic, even if it's minhag, it may be underpinned by two Torah mitzvahs. And this is the approach that Rav Kook takes. Rav Kook in number 37, I'll leave you to read this significantly on your own, but he basically says, you can't mess around with minhag. People think erroneously that, I don't mean minhag, because people use the word minhag in a very light way. Oh, my minhag is to have scrambled eggs with bagels on a Sunday morning. Oh, that's a nice minhag. That's not really a minhag. That's what you do on Sunday morning. He says, Rav Kook, minhag has a deep-rooted status in the halachic system. A, there's a concept of Shema b'ni musar avicha v'atitosh torat imecha, which, and he quotes from the Gemaras in Pesachim of where later generations came and said, look, our parents had minhagim. One of them was they wouldn't travel on a Friday more than certain distances. But we're traders. We need to do that. Can we kind of break with that? And the Gemara says, no, you can't do that. You have an established minhag which dates back dore dorot, okay? You can't just play fast and loose with that. And so too, if you look in the last paragraph here, six lines up from 37, V'ha Rambam, B'perik Achmeh, Hilchas Mamrim, Le'inyan Isurim Shel Divrei Sofrim, V'chomer Shelahem Bichlal, Yalfinu Milot Hasur, he says, you derive this from Lot Hasur, Nachid B'chad Amachta Isurim U'minhagim. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about the Rabbanon, Isurim, or whether you're talking about Minhagim, Hishva Bazer Eta Minhagim Ima Takanot, says Rav Kook, they're all in the same boat. It all forms part of the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Va'achol hu bichlal Torah Sheba'al Peh. The ein shum makom lahakel b'minhagei avot hakadoshim. You can't play around with these ancient minhag. U'befrat v'inyanim ha'musurim l'rabim. Certainly things which have become the national practice of Klal Yisrael. We have to be careful with the minhagim of our ancestors, not just as a lighting, but as a Torah mitzvah. When it comes to the kedusha of our shuls, we have to bear this in mind. And he's not going back to the temple now. He's saying we have to build shuls the way that they were always built. Midor dorim uva'avdala bein azrat nashim ve'ezrat anashim ve'ezrat nashim. And he ends with the bracha v'haya machaneu kadosh. Our sanctuary should be have kedusha b'schutze niskeh kulanu yachad la'alot l'tzion berina b'simchat olam. He, of course, Rav Kook always wants to end with a flourish and a bracha, that if we do this, we should have the schut to go up to Binyan Beis HaMikdash, lirot b'simcha goyenu, and our nation as a whole should be b'simcha, u'b'binyan Beis Mikdashenu b'vat achat. Okay? Sounds like the end, but it's not the end. Because next week we need to finish this, because there's a whole second side to this, which is a whole group of poskim are worried about people seeing each other. Men can't see the women can't see men, and therefore you're going to end up with mechitzot shel barzel, okay? And we'll see where that comes from. So before you rip the curtain down from your balcony, not so quick, come back next Wednesday and we'll finish this topic off, and we'll see where it goes, okay? I'm sorry again for the late start. We'll work out the parking situation. That was rough.